And let's resume recording.
This meeting is being recorded.
Okay. So, our topic for today is, again, the stira between the sugya in Gittin Ayin Dalet, Amid Beis, and Bav Metzia Ayin Zayin Amid Aleph. You'll recall the Gemara Bav Metzia quoted Rava as saying, you hire workers to water your field, and the rain finishes the job for them. It's the Poalim's loss, meaning they're not entitled to be paid. That seems to contradict the Gemara in Gittin Ayin Dalet Amid Beis, which held you have a sharecropper. The standard going rate for sharecropping is the sharecropper waters the field three times in the season, and he gets a 25% share. And you say to him, look, you'll do an extra watering. You'll water the field four times in the season, and you'll get a 33% cut. You'll get a third cut. And what happens is that it rains before that fourth watering, rendering it unnecessary. Machlokes in the Gemara, rap whether the aris is the sharecropper is entitled to be paid the higher rate. We paskin like Rabba, who holds halo it's tricha, that since the field didn't need it, the aris basically did what he was supposed to do, and therefore he's entitled to get the higher rate of payment, even though the rain rendered his work unnecessary. So that's what the Rishonim take to be a stira between the two sugyas, because the Gemara Bava Metzia Ayin Zayin holds that the worker doesn't get paid for not working, whereas the Gemara in Gittin holds that the worker does get paid for not working. So the Rishonim were bothered by this contradiction. We saw the Rif ask this question, and Dapi Rif Lamed Hei Mebeis in Gittin, and he offered the following distinction. He said, Mistavril and Deshaini Aris Mi Poel. We have to distinguish between the cases on the grounds that one case is a case of a poel worker, that's the Gemara Bava Metzia. The Gemara in Gittin is a case of the aris sharecropper. And why should they be different? Because an aris is kishutaf dami. A sharecropper is like a partner who I think has an equity interest in the field. Wow, look at that person in Cole's background.
Itamar, Ty knows English.
All right.
Wait, do you guys know each other?
Does he know what social distancing means?
No.
But Itamar, you didn't overlap with Ty?
I don't think so. But I like that.
Ty's in Israel now?
Ty is indeed in Yeshivat Har Etzion.
Wow.
He is even stuffier than I am.
I got it. Well, Cole, you used to have a Panama hat.
I used to have a Panama hat. You do have a Panama hat, but it's like a Haredi Panama hat. It's like black.
We'll just ignore that, this comment for now, Cole. we'll worry about your racial issues later. And Adam, good to have you here.
Pretty clear.
What's that, Ben?
So I thought he said he writes for First Things. I thought that was clear.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, no stereotyping.
Right. We're trying to be good this year.
That's right. Umistavrilan deshaini aris mi poel. So the Rif says that there's a distinction between a sharecropper and a poel, because a sharecropper is like a shutuf dummy. And what I think the Rif is getting at is that he thinks the sharecropper has an equity stake in the land. He's given an ownership position. He's given an equity in the karka. The ias nisa hahiar lo hava shakel midi. And the fact that his compensation is structured as an equity share is evidenced by the fact that if the land doesn't produce at all, the sharecropper goes home with nothing. So that shows you that his compensation is tied to the field's output. Hilkach kiven de kabla le de doli arba kana le tilsa. The moment he enters into this bargain with the landlord, that he'll get a third of the field for watering it four times, he's kone a third of the field. There's a kinyan, right? There's some sort of ex ante upfront exchange. The kivan de lo etzarech lo pakamansa delay. And of course, when there's like a sale or there's an upfront exchange, the mere fact that you don't have to do the work isn't a reason to dilute your share in the karka. So I think the Rif's distinction here is to say that an aris has a kinyan in the karka, and once you have a kinyan, the transfer is almost like a property right, and so it's not going to be diluted simply because the aris didn't have to do extra work. A poel is different because a poel really only gets paid for the work that he does, and there's no reason to pay him for work that he doesn't do. Let me just support this reading a little further. The Ramban, in his Chidushim Tebav Mitzi Ayin Zayin Amid Aleph, he quotes the Rif's discussion in Gittin, quotes the Rif as asking this question, and he cites the Rif this way. Uparik, the Rif answered, Shiny Aris, Dechiman de Isle Chulka Ba'ara Dami, a sharecropper is somebody who has a stake, a share in the field, in the land. Vigufe Miknayale, and he acquires a certain ownership in the land. Dechishutav Dami Lemikne Rav Chalanafshe Valpoelo. And therefore, he gains when he doesn't have to do the work, like any partner would gain by not having to do work, right? That's what it means to have like an ownership in the land. A good capitalist, he gains just for owning the shares, not for investing labor. And that's why the Rif and the Ramban are saying that an aris, once he's structured as a shutaf, that the compensation amount isn't tethered to the amount of work he does. Adam, you have a comment here?
Yeah, well, do you think this would still be true even if there was not Hatzchalat HaMalacha?
Yes. I think this is true even without Hatzchalat HaMalacha because they're viewing the agreement between the landlord and the sharecropper as one of a hakna b'guf hakarka.
But then you need some action of some sort to, you know, truly make the kinyan beyond just the verbal agreement?
Yeah, so I think like if they did some sort of maisa kinyan to consummate their understanding, that would be sufficient. And if they didn't do a maisa kinyan, then maybe you would require haskal samalacha just as a hechatimtzi to consummate it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yoni?
It's something I'm not really following. Let's say that you bought a piece of land, right, with full kinyan, and part of the kinyan was attached to Nye that the seller said that you have to water the land 10 times a year, right? Like, I want you to water this land. That's a time you make the full sale. You want land, which I don't take afterwards. And you don't end up watering it. Instead, it gets watered because it's a very rainy year. Do you feel the Nye? That
method still work. Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's a bit of an open question. Of course, you could have a sale that's conditioned on a certain tanai. but I think the Rif is saying that's not what's going on here, right? The real thing that's going on in a sharecropping agreement is not that the Baal Bayis has some specific kpeda that you water the field a certain number of times. He's really interested in making sure that, you know, the field produces the right kind of output. And that's structured generally as a hakna in the guf hakarka. So I think there's nothing in the Rif that's precluding structuring it in a way, saying a necessary condition of this agreement being valid is that you physically water the field four times. But in a standard sharecropping agreement, there's no reason to view the structure as having that form.
That layers said.
But then if it was a poel, so then the poel agreement, the structure does have specifically
used. Exactly. By,
that's like the argument?
Yeah. By default, we view a poel agreement as coalescing around the performance of specific tasks. Let's see. We'll see formulations that take a clearer stand on this. Let's just take, we had a comment from Donnie, I think. Donnie, were you going to say something before?
About the RS starting in Malacha.
Sounds like Donnie was about to talk about the Eschalta de Gula.
Yeah, I know. Live boom, really. I don't know why that would have any connection. Anyway, a little tired. No, because when you have an aris, when they get into an aris baal relationship, is there any kinyan at the beginning of that? Like, how do you get into an aris relationship?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. The Rishonim here don't tell us, but notice that the language of the Rif is that kivan de kabla le de dali arba kana le tilsa, right? Once he accepts the arrangement that he'll water the field four times, he acquires a third of the field. So everything is done up front, like the sale paradigm, right?
Yeah, that's why I was saying, like, I feel like that's why you don't even need any work to be done, because it's like they're like the kinion has happened.
Yeah.
Like, however this RS relationship started.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it could be that an RS relationship, you have to sign some paper, you have to do some kinion suitor. I imagine that the Rif, you know, agrees to that. He's not telling us a chiddush that RS relationships could, you know, commence ex nihilo or something, yesh me'ayin, right? good. Okay, so that's the Rif and the Ramban's formulation of the Rif's idea. Tosfos and Bava Metzia, and Ayin Zayin has a similar formulation, which we saw last time. Tosfos says, you know, he notes that there's this contradiction. He adds in just this formulation into the Gemara, that the Gemara in Gittin views the Aris as benefiting Mishum Dimishamaya Rechimi Aleh. In the sharecropper case, right, for some reason we view the heavens as having mercy on the sharecropper, but not so in the Poel case. So what's the distinction? The Yeshlomar Didavka Ba'aris Sheyored Lekarka Ba'arisus No Sein Lo Hashalish Afilu Asi Mitra Misefik Deshema Lo Asi. And here we notice that although Tosos is distinguishing like the Rif between a Poel and an Aris, he doesn't talk so much about a Kinyan, although he does say Sheyored Lekarka Ba'arisus, but he doesn't really talk about a Kinyan. He doesn't talk about an upfront transfer. It sounds like Tosos is really leaning in more to this idea that when you hire a sharecropper, you know, you always know that there's a risk that it might rain, which would render his performance unnecessary. And that's just a risk that the Balabayas usually accepts, right? Meaning you pay, and I think somebody made this point last time, you pay the RS because you don't want to take the risk that the rain will do all the work for you. So the idea here is not that the RS is kona chelek in the karka and therefore deserves to get the higher amount even if he didn't do the labor. The idea more is just that we view this as an implicit assumption of that risk, a risk which the Balabayas accepts when he hires the Aris. And Toso seems to lean to ground this point in what Adam last time called just like this inductive argument, that this is standard for Arisim. Kimo shar Arisi deshakli riva afilu asi mitra lo yitztarech ledalos tilsa. You know, like in a standard Aris agreement, it seems like it was understood that the Aris would get paid even if he didn't have to do the watering. So I think you could even read this Tosfos as saying that Arisim are paid based off results, whereas Poelim are paid differently. Avalhocha Poelim she'enam Arisim, ela nozdein lahem schiros al ha-melacha, ein lahem litol ela lefimasha asu. Right? They should only be paid for work that they did. They shouldn't be paid for work that they didn't do. So I think Tosfos is drawing a similar distinction to the Rif, though for him, the real point is not about Kinyan versus no Kinyan. Rather, it's about Poelim being paid for labor, that's labor that they invest, and Arisim being paid based off output, because the Balabayas just implicitly assumes the risk that the rain will do the job for them.
I just want to... So Zolti said something a few minutes ago that like raises... I think a meta halachic question.
Yeah, cool. Let me just make one point on this, and then I'll take your comment just to wrap up this discussion of the Rif. The Ritva in Bav Mitziah in Zayin Amid Aleph also cites the Rif. Rabbeinu Afasi gives whatever this answer. He characterizes the Rif as distinguishing between Aris, de Isle Zechusa Begufa Da'ara, right? Someone who has a kinyan in the, like an equity share in the karka itself. And I think he's right to say, Vikarov Leze Pirshu HaTosvos. Tosvos is not identical with the Rif's position. It's Karov Leze. It's a similar position, which distinguishes between the assumption of risk that there is in the case of the Aris and the case of the Poel, where the Balabayas is only expecting to pay for a work that's actually completed. Okay, well, Cole, let me take your point, and then we'll move on.
Yeah, I just... So what Zolzi said is, I think, is a version of a comment that's frequently made in these discussions, which is just like, in all Hosh and Mishpat discussions, which is like, we can, in Dine Mamonos, you can put whatever conditions you want, unless, more or less, unless it runs up against some like Isser Beheter problem. Kili Abadim would be, you know, an example of that.
Right.
But like,
Kol Tanai Shebi Mamon Kayim.
Say again?
Kol Tanai Shebi Mamon Kayim.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that like the right way to view, you know, this spectrum of relationships, you know, Kablan, Aris, etc., is, and, you know, Dine Shmira, you know, Shoel, until, you know, Shomer Sachar, whatever it is, or Shomer Chinam, is just like, the halacha will, basically, the halacha says, like, you tell me what the conditions of your agreement are. I'll tell you where we slot it. In other words, it's not that people, you know, think to themselves, like, I want to have an aris relationship, I want to have an employment relationship, I want to have a shutfus relationship. They decide the terms of their relationship. Then the halacha answers their questions. The input that, you know, legal actors contribute to the halachic system is not the name of a relationship. It's a series of specific conditions, and then the halacha will spit out, like, a din result. I think that's the answer to the, you know, what Zolzi's saying is like, you know, well, it remains an open question always, like, what kind of relationship is it? It's like, no, it doesn't. The halacha has already answered that question. It's asking you for all of your conditions and do whatever you want. And then we'll tell you, you know, on the basis of, you know, our, you know, the analysis of, you know, these dinim, actually what kind of relationship you have produced.
Okay, that's one way you could put it. Let me try to rephrase what you're saying, Cole, and tell me if I'm getting it right. So, and Adam is our, well, Gabe, you're here too, right?
I'm back, probably.
I see you, Adam. I see, but Gabe, is Gabe also here? I see, who's the 917?
I'm here as well.
Okay, good, Gabe's here too. So Adam and Gabe are our economic consultants over here. Adam, did you major in economics?
I'm actually a
SMICA
student.
You're a SMICA student now?
I'll be it off campus.
Right. You're like a 1/5 SMICA student. No, I'm kidding. 1/2 SMICA student based off the, you know, the time of your SMICA.
That's right.
I'm just kidding, Gabe. In my book, you're a full-time SMICA student.
I appreciate that very much.
Okay. But a virtue, but, you know, there are two Columbia-trained economists, And she talked, so, I mean, look, you could say the following here, and Adam and Gabe will help us out. You know, I think in a perfect world, the parties would foresee every possible contingency and, you know, Kol Tanai Shebi Mamon, they would get those lawyers to write out a provision for any possible contingency. There will be no uncertainty. The lawyers will say, this is what happens if it rains. This is what happens if it doesn't rain. This is what happens if the river dries up. This is what happens if the wife gets sick. This is what happens if every contingency. And then you wouldn't need all these kind of default rules because the parties themselves could put in their preferences. And that's probably the best way to do things. And the halacha has no objection to that because Kol Tanai Shebi Mamon Kayim, right? We allow people to structure their affairs more or less in the way they want to, as, you know, putting aside issues that Cole pointed out about, you know, Isurim infringing on Choshen Mishpat discretion, on Choshen Mishpat freedom. But, look, it's very difficult for parties to do that. As economists would say, the transaction costs or the information costs are too high, right? No one could foresee every contingency. It's too expensive to hire actuaries to kind of price in all these things and know exactly how much they cost and who more efficiently could bear them, et cetera, et cetera. And so the halacha creates default rules for absence the parties themselves making provisions about these things. which one of the parties should be stuck with certain losses. So I think Cole's right in general, except that the halakha has to step in when just the information costs or the transaction costs are too high for people to make all these provisions themselves and tell us what the default rules are. Cole, does that...
I was a little bit worried that you would say that. I think it's important to the... So what you're basically saying, I think, is that in a perfect world, there wouldn't be employees, there wouldn't be partnerships, there wouldn't be any of these things. There would be an infinite diversity of unique relationships, totally dependent on... Okay,
so... That's my... You see, so I knew that you were going to be upset with my overly deflationary account of... You're kind of like halachic... You're halachic ontological essentialism.
Right. So on behalf of... let me put it this way. If I had only ever been to Rav Rosenzweig Senior's cheer, I would feel an obligation to defend these particular categories as, like, carving out important... I'm not saying that they're the fabric of the universe. I'm not saying that, you know, when all is, you know, when we do the accounting of the citizens of the universe, that, you know, employment will be there or whatever. But I think that these are, like, you know, they are... I'm not saying that there are others. I'm just saying I do think they're the and this relates actually to the machlokes between the Chazon Ish and Rav Cutler from last year.
On the Arba Avos.
On the Arba Avos. Like, I sympathize with the monism, with the kind of, it's either a monism or a kind of nihilism. It kind of goes back and forth between those two. That you're suggesting. I think that these though are for some reason, I don't think that these are just the lines that happen to be drawn and they could have been drawn like anywhere else. I think it's our job to figure out like philosophically, like what about the human experience is captured by employment that somehow like carves the social universe at the joints. Let me put it that way. If you got me drunk enough, I would agree with you.
So let me say two things in response. The first is, I agree with your characterization that this does turn on this kind of deeper question of halachic ontology. And there is a school of thought out there that thinks of these halachically legal descriptions, shitfus, arisus, poalim, as like fundamental, like halachic truths or something, as like rigid ontological features of the halachic universe. You know, so I guess some people are, you know, think like a mashkon is like this chalos, shame thing, whatever. And I think you're right to point out that I'm not so deeply in that camp. I'm more deflationary about these categories, that these depend, how we conceive of the specific categories really depend on how they're specified in the specific relationships.
Be clear, by the way, I'm not accusing you of pragmatism.
Right.
You can be... Inflationary formalism is not what's at issue here.
Yeah.
In other words, I'm very sympathetic to the, and there's a specific reason, which is just that, like, in a system in which you do have this, so in Eben Ezer, this wouldn't work. Eben Ezer is carved up. The effect of Zolti's of the point that Zolti's kind of eliciting, though, is that that Choshen Mishpat lends itself to much greater plasticity of relationship, which lends itself to the kind of, again, kind of deflationary account that you're empathetic to.
Yeah, let me kind of just
opinion of an race or something like that might turn out to be like a really uninteresting question.
Yeah,
I'm sympathetic.
But let me point out a little further here. This is very similar.
Can you say something about how this relates to Zolti's point? I think we may.
let me just go a little deeper into the philosophy of law rabbit hole here for a second. You have this parallel question in legal philosophy. You know, is a property right, like, does it have some essential features, like a right to exclude and a right to the income, et cetera, et cetera? You know, so same with like a contract. Does it have these essential features? And you should know that Hofeld, you know, who's the gadol of the Chabura. So Hofeld, you know, his analysis of bundling everything into these correlative rights and duties is seen to be the mark of this kind of anti-essentialist talk, right? What all these relationships reduce to is just some specification of rights and duties. Yeah, you bundle, you formulate them a certain way, it's a contract. You formulate them a different way, it's a property right. But these are just like different bundles of like the fundamental rights and duties that could be specified in so many different different ways. And, you know, I'm somewhat sympathetic to that Hofeldian view. That's one point I wanted to make. You know, you're right to say it's associated with this kind of legal pragmatism, which is also called legal realism sometimes. With like Oliver Wendell Holmes and that whole school of like American pragmatism. But that's not really relevant for us. But what I want to say is, and this is the second point I was going to make, is that even if that's, even in my position, I don't think it really matters if we think in these terms, because still you bundle the rights and duties in a certain way and you end up with an aris relationship. You bundle them a different way and you're in a poel relationship. So you still need like broad categories to identify the more fine-grained subset of, you know, different ways of packaging the rights, the Hofeldian rights and duties. So yes, there may not be like some fundamental distinction between an aris and a poel at the rights and duties level. But if they're bundled one way, then you're in an aris relationship where you're shittif in the karka. You bundle them a different way. You're in a poel relationship where the halacha just kind of stipulates that the background expectation is that you're going to do labor. And the reason why we have to, and this is where the economic analysis comes in, the reason why the halacha has to impose this taxonomy of arisus, poelus, shutfus, kablanos, etc., is because you can't reasonably expect parties to specify all the rights, the exhaustive set of rights and duties in any given relationship. So you have to shoehorn them into a broader taxonomy where the default halachic rules just take over. So I think whatever the like all debates about philosophy,
the facts are an issue.
like all debates in like philosophy, like the fundamental theoretical disagreement here will not matter at the.
Anybody was looking for a nafkamina.
That's right. That's right. Zolti, is this kind of where you were? Zolti, is this where you're going with your comment?
Like, should we aspire to live by a society where we follow the primordial kosher mishpat rules, or is it completely religiously neutral? Like, there are enough communities that won't help you understand Bava Metzia, but will help you understand Torah.
Right. So, this is a really interesting question, Yair. I think aregalachas, my shita here, commits me. There's no halachic kiyum in structuring your mortgage with the bank as a mashkon, right? There's no kiyum to try to fit it in to the categories that the Gemara is working in. Let the Gemara's categories bend to the specific form, the specific terms and agreements that you made with your bank, right? This is an even deeper question. You know, if you want to think about this in practical terms. You know, some people think that when you get to the Bezdin Shalmala after 120, Yeah, this is my practical example. This is how you're thinking of it in practical terms. They're going to ask you, you know, so in a mashkon, who's chayav be'onsin? You know, the malveh or the loveh? And I think that's kind of a meaningless question because it's going to depend on the specific expectations that, you know, were entered into when you started this mashkon relationship, right? So you might say different mashkunos with different background assumptions will have different dinim depending on the expectations and the tanayim that the parties made. All right, but this is getting too far afield. Let's take some hands. Noah, you had a hand earlier?
Yeah, I had a hand. It was more of like a point of clarification. I'm still trying to wrap my head around what exactly this was saying. I understand how the Ritva sees like some sort of substantive difference, but I also can't really like articulate what that difference is.
I think an easy way of just explaining the difference. Thank you for bringing us back to Earth over here. I think one way of just formulating the difference is that for the Rif, the distinction between an Aris and a Poel is that an Aris has an equity share. And so there's an upfront transfer of a property right, and since the transaction is done upfront, the Aris is entitled to get a windfall from not having to work. It's like the ball is in his court. He already owns his percentage of this field. It takes something very strong to take away his equity share. For Tosfos, the distinction is different. It's just that when you enter into an Aris relationship, the contract by default is output related, not labor input related, right? So the aris is getting paid for the results. The poel is getting paid for the labor input. No, that's the difference.
Yeah, but according to Tosfos' understanding, I don't really understand why that would make it different. Okay, I got it. Yeah.
Okay, Adam has a hand. Let's take Adam.
Going back to the La La Land we were in before, going back to that like discussion, what's like more philosophically going on in the background? Something that I always like have been thinking about as gone through the sugya is this idea of asymmetric information and how that plays into it.
Yeah,
which itself is a big like economic concept. Like it seems to be a big part of what in general halacha is concerned about.
I agree. But
Adam is, you know, a Columbia University graduate, our leading empirical student of information asymmetries, Joseph Stiglitz, professor of economics at Columbia University.
Exactly.
Associates in Talmud from Yeshiva University. I just got in the mail last week.
Adam, were you going somewhere with this? Did you want to develop that point further, or?
No, I mean, like, I think that actually plays a lot, like, towards your point. Like, theoretically, there is something behind the halakha that's guiding it. But in practice, the halakha has to, like, create certain points of conflict if, like, a more or less a guiding force into it. Because we can't possibly, in every contract, like, lay out what they all are. We can't all just be guessing what they are.
Exactly. I think you're 100% right to say that the attunement to the information asymmetry here reflects that kind of underlying concern for information costs and transaction costs, right? Adam, I take that to be your point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. This relates to an exchange I had with Cole earlier today about, like, why is it that information asymmetry is significant in deciding the allocation of the loss? And I was basically pushing your point, Adam, right? It has to do with like these concerns about transaction costs and it being too expensive for the parties to literally hammer out every contingency. Yeah. Cole, right? Is that correct? An accurate description of our earlier discussion?
You said the law and econ people were sympathetic to that. I'm gonna copy and paste just my text I just resent it to you. But yeah, anyway,
You could copy and paste my response, and if I don't like it, I'll just deny that was actually my response.
Also, I think that the
yeah. The person's name.
Of information asymmetry exists not only on the practical level of why we don't expect everyone to list out all the possible, you know, results of the case, but also exists on the level even before that, like how the halacha works itself. Like, what is the fundamental thing behind it?
Yeah.
Like, who in general is responsible? I think that sort of follows often information asymmetry.
100%. 100%. Okay, good. Let's move on here. Unless, Yoni, did you want to follow up a little bit? Yoni, since you got us into this rabbit hole?
I mean, I just don't understand fully why my comments related to any of this discussion. That's all I have to say.
That's
right. I was just getting hypothetical.
Right about you. I think your discussion of, like, what if the specific expectation and t'nai in the case was X, how does that bear on, like, the Arisus Poel thing? And Cole used that as a hechatimti to launch us into halachic metaphysics. Right?
Sure, I didn't promise a discussion. I just didn't see how it directly pertained to what I
said. And Noah will send a link to the Aaron Siegel article that I sent him about halachic metaphysics or metaphysics of halacha. Maybe that's even related to this discussion. So.
Yeah, I think actually that should be. Why don't we send that around? I have that on Kindle. I'm gonna send that around to you people.
Great.
Everybody should read that.
Okay. Good. Thank you, Cole. Thank you, Noah. All right, everyone. Very interesting discussion. Okay, so see, we were able to get some davar katan in, some davar gadol, little havayos to buy a rava. It's all good all around.
Which was the katan, which was the gadol?
That's right. We'll leave that to the Darshei Ramazim to figure out. Okay. Only Ami knows the answer to that. So that's one distinction between the sugyas, and I think as we are pointing out that there's the two different ways of formulating that distinction. The Ravid, in his Hasagos on the Rif in Gittin Lamed Hei Amud Beis, offers another way of parsing up the distinction between the sugyas. Anybody remember the Ravid? What does the Ravid add to this discussion? What's his theory? How should we draw the line between Bav Metzia and Gittin, the case where the worker gets the windfall and the case where the worker gets stuck with the loss? The Ravid number one, what's his point? Let's see. Any volunteers? Gabe, did you see the Ravid, Gabe?
Ooh. His point is that Kablana is that, like, this applies to Kablana's also, no?
Yeah. He extends the distinction to Kablanos. He says, after discussing the Rif's answer, remember the Rif said that the Aris gets to be paid even for not doing work. He says, V'linira d'chol Kablanos nami dinei hachi. A Kablan also should get paid for not doing work if the work became unnecessary. You know, so the idea is you hire me as a Kablan. So remember, a Kablan is kind of just like a tailor. You don't tell him when and how and exactly under what conditions he has to do the job. He really just has to get the job done. He's got to give you back a tailored suit. The kiman nachis la vidita, once he goes down to work, right? Once he enters into the contract, kol mai de misrami ravcha bahi avidita le kablan have. Any gain that the Kablan gets, any boon that he gets, by fortune or some other means, it's for his benefit. And why does he say that? He says, because consider the following, the imis rami le nami tircha yisera aledi de rami. Because consider the other side of the curve. If he encounters some extra tircha in getting the job done, that's his loss to bear. So when you just think about the equity, the kind of the fairness of the situation, since a Kablan has to absorb any extra costs in getting the job done, it only seems right to say that he gets to reap the benefits of some added fortune, some added gain. So you could think of it, you drop your suit off at a tailor for them to for them to fix up or to hem. And the cost of stitching, the cost of sewing materials just, you know, goes up. That's going to be the Koblenz loss to bear, right? He's going to have to pay more. So the same should be true if the cost of stitching sewing materials goes down. That's his benefit to reap. And so the Ravid thinks that, in this answer, the distinction is really between a Koblen and a Poel. A Poel is paid for labor. The Koblen is entitled to be paid even if he doesn't add the extra labor. So this is kind of just like a translation of the Ravid's argument. What do you think he's getting at? What's the underlying theory for why the Koblen benefits from not working, but the Poel doesn't? So he points to this consideration, but what's the underlying point, Yoni? Yoni?
Yeah, well, I actually think he had like a more muted version. I think that's actually his shita. But I think based on what we said, like until now this year, the Koblen, I think, has more of an ownership over the labor itself he produces. It's kind of like you hire him to complete, you know, to finish the shirt. So he kind of owns the shirt in the meantime. So I think Yard is somewhat akin to a riff version, that there's some type of ownership within the actual labor, and therefore he gets any benefit, that any windfall that might occur from rain or unexpected, you know, some help to his job.
Put that a little differently. I mean, I definitely see what you're getting at. You're saying that there's something about the Koblen owning his own labor that explains why he should be entitled to this external benefit.
I think effectively you hire someone to finish a job. You aren't telling him to work on my field. You're just telling him to work the job until he finishes it, until he has a complete product.
Okay, very good.
In his hands.
Very good.
So anything that's, you know, any benefit that he accrues, that's, you know, that's all on him. Like that, you know, it doesn't relate to you in any way. You're just asking to finish, hand you the finished product. And however that finished product is completed, that's what matters.
I think that's exactly right, Yoni. The underlying point for the Ravid here seems to be, based off what we saw earlier in the year about the distinction between a Koblen and a Poel, a Koblen is result-oriented. You pay him to give you back a tailored suit. And so it doesn't matter what costs he incurs in doing the tailoring. It doesn't matter whether he waved a wand and the tailoring was done for him. He's being paid purely for producing the results. So if the results happen some other way under his watch, it's his benefit to reap. And that's kind of what I think the Ravid is pointing out with the symmetry argument. He's paid to produce a result, so if there are added costs, unanticipated costs, they're the Koblenz to bear. So by the same logic that he's just really paid to produce a certain result, if they're unanticipated gains, they're his to reap. So I think the Ravid's argument for Koblen turns exactly on that distinction. A Poel is paid for his labor investment. A Koblen is paid for producing a certain result. And that's very different from the Rif's distinction, which is about an aris having a kinyan bikarka, which shouldn't be uprooted simply because some work was unnecessary.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, let me just take Adam's hand and we'll take Cole, because Adam had his hand up. Yeah.
Yeah, the thing is interesting, this is an aris isn't really end-oriented.
You think an aris is not end-oriented?
No, an aris, a sharecropper, right? If he waters it three times, then he gets, okay, a fourth of the field. But it doesn't say anything about what's the state of the field at the end of the day.
Well, I think the Rishonim here are assuming that an aris, well, at least in the Ravid's view, an aris is also result-oriented because he's expected to produce a certain yield. Right? That's really what matters in the aris. And that's explicitly how I was interpreting Tosfos.
He's going to get paid one way or the other. He just takes a third or a quarter of whatever was produced.
Right, but if nothing is produced, he gets nothing.
That's true.
So
it's not result-oriented the same way. It's not that you have a certain threshold of produce to determine when you're going to start paying your aris. He gets a third of whatever there is.
But isn't a third of whatever there is a kind of end result? Right? He's not paid for input. He's paid for just the brute output. Which is structurally similar to a Kablan on the right of its theory.
He's paid based on the median output. Let's be honest, at the end of the day, like, if your field only grows 3 grains of rice, I mean, that's not very good.
Yeah.
That's equivalent to a failure, but he's still getting paid off from it.
Guys, I'm being, do you hear the giggling in the background? Or no?
A little bit.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe I should just bark at the kids. Kids, no talking. No talking. And they laugh at me. All right. Cole, you want to follow up?
Yeah, I just have are we going to cover negligence on the job at some point?
Yeah, that's part of our discussion.
The only reason I ask is, there is such a concept in, back up. A number of months ago, we noticed that a Kablan, the Isser V'Heter restrictions on employment relationships might not apply to Kablanos relationships, at least according to some Rishon.
Right.
That's a greater proximity of Kablanos to Avdus, you know, when it's consent, you know, obviously. What's interesting here, I never really thought about this, is that
Adam's funny. Adam, that was a funny comment.
All right, great. Not negligence, malevolence. I've never really thought about it. There's a concept in secular law known as a subcontractor. A contractor, which makes a lot of sense. A contractor, you know, I go to a dry cleaner, for instance, who sends his stuff, the stuff I sent him, to another guy. That's a subcontractor. It's not a worker exactly.
Yeah.
Is there a concept of sub-worker? I think that's a very interesting test case for, like, what kind of kinyan obtains between employer and employed.
I agree. I mean, that's an interesting Kablan question. I don't think we have to get that deep into the Kablan question just for the Rivids, you know, for purposes of understanding this Rivid, though.
I raise it as a... put it in the suggestion box.
Now, so that's the Rivids. The Rivid adds in Kablan, and he thinks that's the place to draw the line. So it's unique to a Poel, it seems, that he's specifically to be paid for work that he does, that he'll lose if the rain does his job for him, but a Kablan who's paid for results will gain if the rain does his job for him. The Ran on the Rif in Gittin Lamed Hey, so on that same discussion, quotes the Ravid, and he flushes out the Ravid's distinction a little further. He says, Aval HaRavid, this is slightly different from the Ravid's own formulation, Kasav, the lav dafka aris shafilu kabla nami kahudinosh im kibel kama liktzor the katzar chetzia uvo achirim vigamrua o nimalim vikirsimua zacha bischiruse. So a kablan gets paid even if other people did finish the job for him. So this is like I keep forgetting if it's Tom Sawyer or Huckleberry Finn. I think it's Tom Sawyer, where you get somebody else to whitewash.
Whitewashing of the fence.
That's right. It's kind of subcontracting.
Greatest subcontracting narrative in the history of literature.
That's right. So the Rivid thinks it was Huck Finn who convinced them. Was it Tom Sawyer or Huck Finn who convinced it?
Was Tom Sawyer. The whitewashing of the fence was Tom Sawyer.
Okay. So the point, if you get somebody else to finish the job for you, then you're still entitled to be paid. And here's the key phrase that the Ran adds in. It doesn't appear in the Rivid. Did Dafka Bipoel Hu Damrina Dipseda Dide? Lefisha sachro eino ella kefi tircho. V'chol she'eino toreach eino notel. Right? So a very narrow interpretation of what a poel is. A poel is really paid for his labor investment, for his labor input, for his tircha input. That's consistent with the formulation we saw in Tosvos earlier. Tosvos says, aval hacha poelim nosin lehem schiras al hamalacha ein lehem litel el lefi mashe asu. And here you get this even sharper formulation in the Ran. Aval kablan ein scharo taloi ela bigmar melacha. A kavlan is just paid by result to get the job done. V'chol she'nigmar bein al yado bein al yedei achirim, no tal kavlan usa. So, I think that's just, the Ran has a very sharp formulation of this Ravid, the Ravid's idea. Let me just point out quickly that the Ramban in two places, in Sefer HaZechus, where he criticizes the Ravid on the spot in Dap Arif and Gittin Lamed Hei, and then in his Chidushim in Bav Mitzia and Ar Sugya, the Ramban criticizes the Ravid's idea, and he thinks that the extension to Kablan is not justified. So he thinks that a Kablan would be closer to a Poel. The Kablan does not deserve to be paid for work that he doesn't do. He says, "L'inyan kablano shehora haravzal dechol ravcha demisramile de kablan have," with respect to the Ravid's chiddush that the kablan gets the windfall if the job is rendered unnecessary. He says, "I can't really bring a proof one way or the other, but there's a Yushalmi in Bavakama, which talks about a case where we basically end up with an agreement that I will go to save your donkey that's drowning and you'll pay me for it. If the water ends up spitting out your donkey without my producing the results, the Yushalmi says that I'm not entitled to be compensated for the work." And so the Ran thinks that's a kind of kablanos, and you could infer from there that a kablan doesn't get paid if the water does his job for him. We don't have to get so deep into the Ramban's raya, but the Ramban thinks that sugya is a reason to be skeptical of the Ravid's chiddush. Yoni, I'll take your hand in 1 second. Let me just point to the Ramban's formulation above Mitzia Ayin Zayin. Again, he quotes the Ravid's chiddush of Kablanos, and he says, you know, I'm not so sure about the Kablan idea. And he says, there's actually the Yushalmi works against the Ravid for the same reason. Even though I started to go into the ocean to save your donkey. Revach sheba, I guess, bo, lebal habayasu. The Kablan's not entitled to be paid for work that he doesn't do. The river did the work, the ocean did the work for him, and he's not entitled to be paid. So that's a bit of a snapshot of the Kablanos discussion. Let's see. Yoni, you have a hand?
Yeah, so according to the Ramban, what does that suggest about his understanding of the Kablan? Like, according to what we had argued until now, like, the Ravid made a lot of sense. So
yeah.
Like, does he have, like, a very different version of Kablan, or it's just slightly, you know, altered?
Yeah. Good question. Anybody have an answer for the Zoltz question? See what the Zolt is. Yoni's saying Yoni likes the Ravid's argument. And he's saying, yeah, the Ramban has some cryptic Yushalmi. And we'll see the Ran thinks that maybe there's also a proof from the Bavli case, but where you go to bring the food to the sick person. But, you know, the Ravid's logic seems to be impeccable. Is that your point, Yoni?
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah, anybody have a response to the Zolti problem?
Sorry, what's the problem being raised?
Yoni, you want to restate?
Well, the problem is just that based on what we had argued pretty much all year about what Kablan is, and that it's effectively a job you're hired to do to complete a particular laboring, why that laboring, what matters is kind of the end product. So according to that argument, what the Ravid said makes a lot of sense. So what is the Ramban and I guess the Ran disagreeing, not really disagreeing about the whole conception of Kablanos? Are they disagreeing about the application of that principle here? Like, just how do they view Kablanos?
What exactly is the problematic line?
So it's not a problematic line.
Disagreeing.
Right, saying the Ravid has a good argument. Kablanos is based off end result. The Ramban points to a Gemara that seems to kind of undermine the Ravid's conclusion, but it doesn't really engage the Ravid's logic. It doesn't engage the kind of the logic seems right. If a Kablan's paid by result, then he should reap the benefit of the work being done for him, right? So on which point is the Ramban disagreeing with? Right, is that your point, Yoni?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cole, you want to you venture an answer? Or?
I'm equally confused. Maybe this is just the Ramban. Are we left? Like, maybe he's just defending the riff.
Could be. Yakir, you want to weigh in?
I mean, it's not. I don't think it's. I mean, maybe this is a slightly different view of Qablanis, but I mean, it's just it's. I think the Ramban would still think it's end result based. Just you with the caveat that you have to be the one who provides the results.
Yeah, I think Yakir's right. Go on, Yakir.
Yeah, it's just that there's a difference between unanticipated gains in terms of which affect how quickly you do the work, let's say, and the work just being taken entirely away from you. I'm holding you.
As always, Alan makes the best contributions here.
Yeah, there you go.
I hold.
Ami, that was a great song you were singing. What was that song you were singing, Ami?
It's hard. It's more like your song.
Me?
It was a great song, Ami. Jigga, 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 jig. Was that the niggin? Was that the tune?
Yeah.
There you go. We got it right. That was a great song. Right, so Yakir, I think what Yakir's suggesting here is that, and this is the kind of the direction that I would lean into, is that, yeah, of course a Kaplan is end result based, but there's like almost an implicit Tanai or an implicit expectation that the Kaplan's got to be the one to, you know, further or deliver those results. Right, Yakir, that's kind of the way I understand your point conceptually. There's just like a sub.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's right. I mean, so there's a Tanai here, basically, either a background assumption or, you know, something about Qablanis that, yes, you're paid for end results, but on the assumption that you more or less are the one to deliver them.
Would you be penalized if there's an unanticipated, you know, problem that comes up? As a Kaplan? Like, it's like other side of the equation accurate still?
I think both sides of the equation are accurate. I think if the work takes longer than you expect, then you have to take longer. If it takes shorter than you expect, then you can still get paid the original rate. You don't have to you don't lose out because of that. So unanticipated gains and unanticipated losses come to you, but as long as you're still within the framework of you actually providing the results.
But you are providing the results in this case. You're
not
watering the field three times, but in the fourth time, it's covered. Isn't that still doing the work?
That's you're talking about Nari's case.
No, I'm talking about the Kaplan. The Kaplan is whatever the case. I mean, like, you have to construct whatever the parallel case.
I mean, the case is the Kaplan. You drop your suit off the dry cleaner. You tell them, clean my suit for me, please. The dry cleaner is just sitting there. Someone else walks in, takes the suit, cleans it, brings it back to you. The dry cleaner has done nothing but just sit there.
Okay, but you're differentiating then between case where you do nothing and where you do some work. So if you went to the dry cleaner and the dry cleaner did part of the work, you know, started the laundering process, and then someone else took it out and folded it, so you would argue that also counts.
I think Yakir could respond that even in the watering case, like you view the fourth watering like as its own unit, because that was like what was added on to the standard RS contract, right? So if you were to be a Kaplan, you say, instead of doing the standard thing, I'll give you a little extra if you do this. You might say, with respect to the extra thing, you did nothing. Yoni.
Okay, but I'm saying in terms of an essential case, of like the standard case of Kaplan, if part of the labor is completed by some other worker
or some
other method,
right.
Who gains from
that? Right. Or let me put it this way, Yonia. I think another way of making... So I agree with the point Yakir is making. Another way of formulating your response to Yakir is that you might distinguish between a case where the Kaplan does nothing and a case where the Kaplan does, like, some part of it, right? And it's noteworthy that the Ravid speaks about cases... all the Ravid's cases, just go back to his discussion... our case is, well, let's use the Ron's formulation of it, because the Ron had the more extensive discussion. You know, you were given a job to cut wheat and you cut half of it and then other people finished the job for you. Or you started half of it and then ants finished the job for you, right? So the Rebbe talks about cases where like you did part, and the Ramban's Raya against comes from cases where you did, like you didn't do anything or something, right? Like the you didn't do any of the saving, the water did all the saving of the donkey for you. Something along those lines. Yoni, is that right?
Okay, I mean, if that's a distinction, then that makes sense. I think it's a fairly like minor disagreement then.
Okay, so you want more motivation for the Ramban's disagreement with the Raivid, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure even the Raivid would disagree if you did not know that you'd get that.
Interesting. Okay, let's.
Maybe what, I don't know, but I think that's like a rather minor dispute. It's not that big a dispute.
Right. All right, we'll put more thought into that question. But let's turn to the Ravid's second answer, what he quotes in the Yesh Misha Omer, a different way of distinguishing between the sugyas. And I think this is the most interesting of the distinctions that are offered. And I think it's really important for two reasons. Let me say the one reason first, then I'll consider whether the second reason is distinct from it. Gabe, you're here, right? Ooh, it's not so reassuring.
I am here. It just takes me a while to commute. I'm out for a lot with mail.
Oh, got it. Okay, good. So, you recall that we, in setting up the discussion here, I think we've seen almost two opposite conclusions from two different sugyas. From the sugya in Kiddushin Yidzayin, right, we saw that a poel shechala, right, or at least according to some rishonim, a poel shechala is the loss, the hefzid is for the balabayis. Why? Either because a poel is a kind of gufo kanoi, or if there's hakdamas hamos, like there's some prepayment, then, you know, we view the labor as being the balabayas' property right, and so the loss accrues to the property owner. And so poel shechala, something like that, would be a hefzid labalabayas. Everybody remember that discussion that came out of the Sugya and Kiddushin? And then we kind of got the opposite impression from the whole discussion in Bava Metzia, Ayin Vav Mebeis to Ayin Zayin Amid Aleph, because there the Gemara seemed to say that when the parties are in the same situation, neither the poel nor the balabayas should have foreseen the ones, or both of them should have foreseen the ones. Who loses between the two of them in that case? Somebody shout out.
Oh, the poel loses.
Yeah, the poel loses, right? Because of this theory of hamotzi mechaber olav haraya, he's the one who has to justify being compensated without doing work. And so Gabe pointed out at the time, and this is why I was pointing to you, Gabe. Gabe said, it's kind of strange, right? Why in the Sugyan Ayin Vav to Ayin Zayin is there this presumption that the poel is not entitled to be paid unless he somehow made some explicit provision, Amutz Mechaber Olav Haraya works against him. That seems to treat the poel relationship not as a property transfer. Right, you're being paid for work done, but the idea coming out of the sugya in Kiddushin Yudzayin about the Eved Shechala seemed to say if Schiras Poelim is a kind of a property transfer, then the Hefzid is Labalabayas, right? So how do we reconcile these kind of opposite implications? That was the question that I think Gabe raised a few shirim back. Gabe, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. Okay, good. So I think the Ravid is thinking along the lines that Gabe is thinking, and he wants to make sense of these opposite inferences or opposite implications, and so he tells us the following, at least in the name of the Yesh Misha Omer, Gam Yesh Misha Omer Sha'afilu Poel Shehu Kimo Zeha Inyan Hachi Dine, you could have a poel, and I think Kimoz the Indian is referring to the earlier line where he said a poel shenachis lavoda, right? A poel who goes who begins his labor, also gets the benefit of not having to work, right? The rain does his job for him that accrues to the poel. It's the benefit of the poel. De'i agre ledavlov yasa mitra ve'hechidami de'asale mitra ve'palga diyoma kihacha inami mishe hiskil b'malacha have pseida de balabayas. Really, both the case in Gittin and the case in Bava Metzia could be a case of poel. But whether the loss accrues to the balabayas or to the poel, sorry, whether the gain accrues to one or to the other, depends on whether we're pre or post haschalas hamalacha. If we're pre-haschalas hamalacha, then the poel is not entitled to anything, right? The water doing the job for him renders his work unnecessary, okay? So he's just not a poel. We'll see that formulation coming out of Tosos. But if there's already a kinyan, there's some sort of haschalas hamalacha, such that the balabayas acquired the labor of the poel, acquired, let's say, kind of there was the sale of labor, then the hefsid will be the balabayas's to bear. The poel gets off the hook entirely. The job was done for him. Tough luck on the balabayas that the balabayas bought this labor that was totally unnecessary. You could buy a product that you don't end up needing, and that's you're stuck with the commodity. So to hear, if you buy labor that you don't end up needing, that's tough luck on you for buying it. It's only pre-Kenyan, or what the Rabbi refers to as pre-Aschalas HaMalacha, that the poel is the loss is the poel's to bear, because there was no acquisition yet, right? All there is kind of this understanding that if I need your work, then I'll pay you for it. But once there's a Kenyan, then the hefsid is the balabayas is to bear. So I think that's a really important distinction. I think that should address the point that Gabe was making a few chaburos ago. Gabe, does that address your point?
Yeah, it addresses my point, assuming a specific conception of how Aschalas HaMalacha works and like the way in which spheres transact. But I accept it as an answer.
It's like Cole's fine, you know? It sounded so so reluctant, right? What do you guys think? What do you think of the Ravid's distinction here? Zolt.
You think this is limited to Hatchalat Malacha, or it includes all forms of
Kinyanim? See, in my view, it would include all forms of Kinyanim, because what matters is the transfer of right, right? Notice what the Ravid cites to justify his position. He cites the next sugya that comes up in the Gemara, Rava's Memra, that if you hire Poalim to do work and they finish the work early, so the Balabayas doesn't get a discount, right? He could ask them to do other tasks for him, but he's got to pay them the full amount of the job. It's his loss that they finish the work early. So I think if you interpret that sugya as saying, look, you bought their labor for a certain amount of time, you can't get a refund for not using the rest of it, you're stuck with the thing that you purchased, then the Ravid's using that memra of Rava, Haiman de Ogre El Girila Avidita Vishalam Avidito Palga Dioma, that the Balabaya still has to pay them out for the rest of the day. If that's pointing towards this Kenyan idea of Schiras Poalim, that the Balabayas purchased their labor, then I think that's a very reasonable raya to this idea that once you're kone their labor and something helps them finish the job, that's the Balabayas' loss to bear. Yoni?
I just think that there's definitely room to argue that the Ravid is limiting this only to Hatchalat Malacha as a Kinyan, as distinct to other forms of Kinyan, like Suda or whatever else it would be. Just because I think Hatchalat Malacha, the argument would be is that once he started actually performing the labor, now the contract in some ways has like really begun, and now formally the Balabayit has taken upon himself those responsibilities.
while proceeding, even if you have kind of Kinian, those Kinian just, you know, reaffirm seriousness or commitment, but doesn't create the actual transfer in the same way.
Well, I think what you're saying is a chiddush about the distinction between Kinian and Ashkalas Amalacha as a Kinian. I'm just assuming for now that they're similar. Assuming that they're both kinds of kinyanim that transfer the right, they're normative transfers of right, then I wouldn't distinguish between them.
Well, then you're kind of similar to the Ritva's, like, Mori Harav argument, right? Where he kind of makes a smart argument that once there's a kinyan, all the bets are off, and it's like a very different way of looking at, like, the alakh of the responsibilities.
Yeah. I think the Moria Rav might be going in the opposite direction.
He is going up. But I'm saying you're saying yes. You're a similar perception of like the Kinyan changing the dynamics.
Yeah, exactly. Like I think of, you know, the Ramban's formulation of Kishem Sheshar Dvarim Niknim Be, you know, Mesira Kach Schiras Pol of Niknes Baschal Asamalacha. I'm just seeing Aschal Asamalacha as like one Hechatimtiv a Maitse Kinyan that's Chal on Schiras Polim. But what's significant is its status as a Kinyan. Let me point out that there's Tosos seems to, or at least according to the Moloah Roim, Tosos has a similar view to the Ravid. Not the Tosos in Bav Mitzia that we saw earlier, which was more akin to the Rif, but Tosos in Gitanai and Dalar Mabez. So Tosos may have a similar distinction, at least on the Moloah Roim's read. So the Tosos in Gitanai and Dalar Mabez says, Ayas this Stira, and he says, V'yesh Lomar, the shiny Hasam, so the Sugin Bav Mitzia is different. And that's why the Poel doesn't get paid if the rain does his job for him. She'eino ela schir yom, she'lo sachro bal habayis ela ledalos. V'kivon she'lo hutzrach, eino schiro. Very interesting formulation. Once the labor is rendered completely unnecessary, right? This guy loses his status as a poel, right? So it's almost, you might think of it as, yes, I was gonna hire you to water the field, but I didn't hire you yet. So unless you already have a shame poel, I'm not obligated to pay you, okay? Aval hacha, where you're a sharecropper, if you're a sharecropper who has a lot of obligations in the field, right, you have several duties, not just to water, you have, you know, your tilling and your de-weeding, etc., etc. Umiyad kisha hisna imo lidalos arba zacha bishalish sada. In the Aris case, there's some sort of hakna, ex ante, where you acquire a chelek in the karka. So it sounds like he's contrasting a case where there's no kinyan, the Poel case, where if your job is not needed, then you're not even a Poel, with the Aris case, where you're considered an Aris in any event, the Haraya, you're still needed for these other tasks. So the Moloah Roim, commenting on this Tosos, says, you could be medayik here that it's mashma davka lo hischilu klal b'malacha chidas ha-ravid. The only time that the Poel would lose if the rain does the watering for him is if he didn't start his job yet. Okay? Why? Because the reason why he should be paid is once he has a shame Poel. Aval hacha kisha lo hutzrach, ein lo shame Poel klal. If your whole task is unnecessary, then you never actually were hired yet. But I think if he thinks if you were hired, l'fizeh b'poel hecha dehischil b'malacha, chal alav shame poel, v'shayach gam kein lomer mazal agarim. Once he already has a shame poel who was hired, so I'm saying, l'achar haschalas amalacha l'achar kinyan, then you can't just take away that shame poel. It's a kinyan that the Baal HaBayis purchased, and now it becomes the Baal HaBayis' hefsid to lose. Does that make sense to you guys? What do you think of the Moloah Roim's interpretation of Tosos? Anybody have thoughts on this? See, the way I understand is that it's in line with the...
I like it.
Was that Adam?
I like it from the Hatkalat Malacha type of idea.
Because you like the Raya Vichita.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it makes a lot of sense, right? Because who bears the loss in this case will depend on the normative transfer of right, which will just turn on whether there was Haskalah Samalacha. And that's kind of what the Mla Rome's getting at also with this idea. Well, if you don't have a shame poel yet, then the Balabais has no... The Balabais didn't lose anything. It was kind of a Kenyan Dvarim. He said, yeah, I'll hire you tomorrow. Show up, I'll give you work. Until then, it's the poel's loss to bear. If there was some execution of a transfer of right, then the Balabais has to bear the loss. And I think what's really elegant about it is that it solves the Gabe problem about how to make sense of how to reconcile the Kenyan idea with the sugyas in Bava Metzia, which seems to suggest there's a presumption that a poel shouldn't be paid if he didn't do work. The answer to that problem is that the presumption that a poel shouldn't be paid without work is only before the execution of the kinyan. Once the kinyan is executed, that presumption no longer holds. Okay.
So I guess if we want someone to object, I don't love the Malacha Rome reading of Tosfos. I think Tosfos raises too many factors for us to isolate one as primary and say that all the others are secondary.
Yeah.
Right, by an artist. It's A, Osa Kol Malacha Tavasade. B, Yishlo Chelek Bakarka. C, that last section. Miyad Kishihitne, Libos Rabba, Zafa Bishlish. And it's hard to know which factor is dominant in this reading.
Right, except Yair, what I would respond to that is that all three of those things are just ways of getting at the point that the shame aris has already been acquired. I mean, there's already a transfer of right of which you can't turn the clock back. So it's evidenced by the fact that, look, he's an aris in virtue of the other things that he's doing. Miyad kishahisna imo, he has some chelik in the karka. That shows you that there was some kinyan up front for an aris. Whereas for the poel, you might say kolzman that there was no ma'isa kinyan or kolzman that there was no aschal samalacha. All it is a promise to give him work tomorrow, which might be vitiated by the rain doing the job for him. I hear your objection, Yair. I'm just
okay. I actually am persuaded. I think if one is going to reject the Malacha Rome, you're going to have a hard time explaining the words the osa kol malacha tavasada.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
good. All right. Nice. Yoni.
Yeah, I hear the Malacha Rome's argument within Tosfos, but I think even within that, you still could argue that it doesn't show what Tosfos believes if there was a Tchalat Malacha with regard to a poel. And then I think that even Tosfos might still say that you view the Malacha that's still left to be done as undone, and you haven't started that malacha yet. So it doesn't make a difference if there was a chalat malacha or not. Either way, the Balabai will say, well, I don't need you for this upcoming work, so I'm not going to pay you for this upcoming work.
Well, except that I would say that if you already have a shame poel, so you can't say, kivan shlo hutzrach enos hira. Right? The idea is that once you have a shame poel, you can't turn the clock back on it, and now the poel is entitled to a certain payment, and the balabais could try to give him other malacha, but the poel has secured his payment.
Maybe. I think you're I think it's one way of reading it. I think you could read Enos Chiro for the upcoming
malacha. Yeah, I hear that.
In which case, you don't have to take that strong. I mean, we haven't really seen too many other toasts that believe in a chalat malacha as models.
It's true. It's true. I think you're right.
More reluctant to say that Tosfos really believes that.
Yeah, that's a good point, that we haven't really seen Aschalas Hamalacha as a theory of Tosfos. Although Tosfos in Ezu Neshech, you recall with the barber case, Kivan Shemasha Chatisporas or something. So in Kablan,
wasn't that?
Yeah, in a Kablan case, Tosfos has the idea. Right, but right.
Yeah, it looks like a poem, and it's a little different.
That's fair. That's a good point. Let me wrap up here with two observations. So this is the Ravid's Chiddush. Maybe Tosfos has a similar idea that once there's Aschalas Hamalacha, the loss is the Balabaises. I think that really helps us solve Gabe's point. The Ravid has a raya from the Sugyanai and Zion Amid Aleph of Haiman de Ogir Agur La Vidita Vishalma Vito Palga Dioma, that if the work gets finished early, the Balabais is stuck with having to pay the Polim for the whole time that he promised to pay them. I take it that the Ravid's using that to evidence that there is a transfer of right. It's not just that if I have labor, I'll pay you for it. If I have work for you to do, I'll pay you. It's that once there's this hakna, then the polem are automatically entitled to their compensation, and the balabais loses if he can't give them more labor or if the labor gets done, v'chule. The Ran has an interesting citation of the Ravid, an interesting way of quoting the Ravid. As we saw before, the Ran kind of inserts language as he did in the Kablon case. I think here the Ran inserts certain language into the Ravid Shita, which brings it into clearer focus. And this is what they say about the kind of the Ramban school, that they slowly refine like the formulations of their predecessors. So you could see here the Ran kind of just brings the Ravid Shita into sharper relief. So the Ran here says, Od kasav harav b'shem achirim, shafilu b'poel kachu dino. From the moment there's haschalas hamalacha, he acquires his schar. So I think, Yoni, this is a really good formulation of haschalas hamalacha being a normative transfer of the right. B'yathal pishal onasis al yadcho v'ravcha didehu. Okay. So I think that formulation of Shemi Oso Shah Zacha Bischiruso is just like a really nice way of capturing this idea of the normative transfer of right happening at the moment of Kinyan. Okay. Contrast that with the Ravid's own formulation, where the Ravid just said, you know, once there's haschalas hamalacha, it's said at the balabayis. He didn't flesh out the underlying reason. The Ran has this sharper point, shemeosho shah zacha bischirusa. Anybody have thoughts on the Ran's refinement of the Ravid's formulation?
Yeah, I agree with you about haschalas hamalacha versus other kinyanim with regard to the Ran's formulation. Ah. I think for the Ran, it's clear that there isn't the transfer, and therefore it probably shouldn't make a difference whether it's haschalas hamalacha or any other form of kinyan.
Good, good. Okay, good. I'm glad that we're on the same page here. Let me just point out, the Ramban takes issue. He's upset with the Ravid's chiddush of trying to extend Pseida de Baal HaBayis to Poalim La'achar Kinyan. And he wants to... He does two things. First, he wants to diffuse the Ravid's proof from the Shalom Avilta Bechatzi Yom case, right? The proof from the case where they finished the work early. He wants to diffuse that raya. And he wants to bring a raya against the Ravid. So the Ramban first tries to diffuse the raya. He says the following. This is the Ramban in Sefer HaZchus. And I think it's a similar formulation in his Chidushim in Bava Metzia. This idea that after Kenyan, or after Aschalas Amalacha, it's Pseid at the Balabais and a Poel, is wrong. So the Ramban thinks that the Ravid gets the Shalom Avidita Bepalga Diyoma Gemara wrong. The Ravid saw it as proof that once the Balabais hires the Polim, the Balabais is stuck paying them out their whole schar. The Ramban says that's not what's going on in that case. It doesn't prove that there's some transfer of a right and now the Balabais is stuck paying out the schiros. Rather, it's a function of a very different principle in halacha. What's that other principle? What explains the Shalom Avita Pagi Yair?
It's the superior knowledge principle.
Exactly. It's a superior knowledge principle, meaning when I hire Po'olim, you know, it's not always clear exactly how long it will take them to do the job. And so I guess if there are certain expectations about how long it will take, the burden is on the Baal HaBayis to make stipulations about what should happen should the work get finished early, because the Baal HaBayis knows what kind of malacha he actually has. He knows what other tasks he might have for the Po'olim. So there's a presumption that the Baal HaBayis has superior knowledge about the kind of work that he's giving them. And so the burden was on him to have made some provision about what would happen if they finished the labor early. And so the reason why he's stuck paying them if they finish the job early is based off the superior knowledge rule that he had the burden to make some t'nai about what would happen in such a case. So the sugya of Shalom Avoda B'chatzi Hayom doesn't show us anything about the normative transfer of right achar haschalas hamalacha. It only takes a stance on it's just a straightforward application of the superior knowledge rule in Onsen, where the pseida will be the Baal HaBayis if he has the better knowledge. Anybody have thoughts on that kind of fight between the Ravid and the Ramban? Anybody have thoughts on it?
Yeah, I remember I was talking to Yair about this a little bit. Why does the... It's an assumption the Ramban's making that the Baal HaBayis would have the superior knowledge.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm not sure why that has to be.
Right. I was wondering the same thing. The Ramban says... It's hard to know like the specific facts that the Ramban is envisioning, right? Is he like envisioning where I go to the market and I say a bunch of guys, I need you tomorrow to do work for me, right? And I just like failed to specify exactly what kind of work, and so the duty's on me who's providing the malacha to specify those things. It must be he's envisioning a case along those lines. Because Donnie, you're right? If I hire workers and I say, I want you to landscape my yard, it's 20 meters and it's got this, this, and that, you might think the Po'olim possess the superior knowledge about how long it'll take them.
Yeah, it's kind of like a difference between getting people at like Home Depot, like who are standing outside versus like actually like people who are actual professionals, which might be like what Po'olim were, like that's how you envision, how the Ramban is envisioning Po'olim, but... I don't know if that has to be.
Yes, I agree. I think it's a really, I think you're totally on point here. And I think that's, it's a strike against the Ramban, right? I mean, it kind of makes his interpretation of the Gemara less plausible because he's assuming like too much of a specific fact pattern. He's reading that into the Gemara. Okay, let me close with two final observations. So the first one is a short one. Just notice that the Ramban is explicit though, that the superior knowledge rule is about who should have made a stipulation at the moment of contract, right? Mishum shebala bayis hayelo lahasnos. Lefisha zeh hayelo lahasnos, vizeh lo hayelo lahasnos. V'alei didei ram yamil salasnuye. So I just want, the Ramban is really explicit that what underlies the sugya in Vav Metzia Ayin Vav to Ayin Zayin is about which party had the burden to make provisions about some possible onus that would occur. Okay, sorry guys, yeah. The second point is, just to conclude, the Ramban thinks that he has a sugya, he has a raya against the Ravid. He points to the sugya in Bava Kamma, Kufte Zayin Amid Aleph. The Braisa there says, Hasokher sapo lahavi karov udumaskinin lechola. You hire somebody to bring medicine to the sick, to a chola. V'halachu matzo shemeso shehivri. And he goes and he finds out that the guy died or he was cured. Nothing those schar mishalim, you have to pay the poel who brought the medicine to the sick person, even though his job was rendered unnecessary. The Gemara ends up explaining the reason why you're chayiv to pay him is based off the idea of hasam avich liach shlichusei. The reason why you have to pay him is because he did his job, right? He did the shlichos that you sent him for. And so the Ramban thinks that this is a raya, that the only reason why you're paying him is because he completed the task. Alma imlo asa shlichuso, af al pi shehivri kodem sheyashlim shlichuso, of eino tzarech le'elu shel shliach, eino notel scharo. The Ramban thinks you can prove from here that if the guy didn't actually do any labor, right, and the chola became healed on his own, there would be no grounds for paying the worker. So Ramban thinks you could infer from here that generally speaking, if a task becomes unnecessary and the poel didn't do work, you see from that sugin bavakama that he wouldn't be paid. And so he thinks that's a good raya against the ravid. Anybody have thoughts on that raya? We could talk about it next time if you want to hold off on how the ravid might address that raya of the Ramban. But that's the mainly what I wanted to cover in this sugya. Any quick comments before we say goodbye for the day? Zolt, you have a haros you want to make here?
No, we can wait till next Thursday. I don't want to keep everyone waiting.
All right, fine. So I guess we'll start off with a few haros. I thought we'd run and finish the whole sugya here, but okay, we'll spend like probably 10-15 minutes wrapping up this sugya. Let me ask you guys the following question. In terms of planning for the next few weeks. So I think we should spend some time just discussing the Hishlam Avoda B'chatzi Ayom case that kind of implicitly comes up in this debate between the Ramban and the Ravid. I think we should discuss that. I want to discuss the other loss allocation sugyas, even though they're a little more related to Schiras Metaltalin and Schiras Batim, because they're very related just to like the general theory of loss allocation. And then I want to move on to Biyomo Titein Scharo and the Zuchus of a Poel to eat Michel Balabayas. That comes up in Asochar as a Poelim. So the question is, how deep do you guys want to go into loss allocation if it pulls us into Schiras Metaltalin and Schiras Batim? Or would you rather kind of do that more superficially just to round out our discussion of loss allocation in Schiras Poelim and try to cover more ground in Biyomo Titein Scharo and Achilas Poelim Michel Balabayas? Anybody have thoughts on this just offhand, or I could send out an email survey?
I'm sort of indifferent.
Ben, you have no preference?
No.
You're happy either way.
I haven't really thought any of those things, so.
Okay, either one's good for you. Okay, anybody else have a preference, or everyone else is cool either way?
My leaning is to stay closer to Poland stuff.
Okay, yeah, Kier wants to stay closer to Poland. Okay.
It's only a slight leaning now.
Okay, slight leaning. Okay, good. Any other
Yeah, I'll follow your lead, whatever you think is easier, better.
Okay, my lead or your Akir's lead?
I meant tomorrow, although I always follow Akir as my low star.
Right. Okay. Good. Noah, Adam, Donnie, Yair, Gabe, any of you have strong preferences? Or?
Yeah, I don't have any strong preferences.
The quicker that we finish this stuff, the more we can jump into Rabbi Nachman and Chassidus.
All right. I'm muting Noah. Even on Lag BaOmer, he doesn't get a bye. All right, good. So we'll stop here, guys.
This is a great background for you.
You like my trees?
Yeah, it's good. People have been talking a lot these days about, like, you know, people's backgrounds, bookshelves, all those things. I think you've hit it pretty well here.
Yeah, I think so. First of all, you don't always need books in the background, right? I agree. Then you have people who like have these virtual bookcases. What's that?
People are reading and judging your books.
Yeah, who needs that? Instead, you get to see my kids' play kitchen. You get to see the kids' bikes and scooters.
You send a message of being a family man.
My bike and scooter.
Very nice.
Yeah, and I didn't even show you the tennis equipment and baseball equipment. This is where it's at.
Nice flowers out there.
Yeah, I could show you the garden. You could see my azaleas. I don't know if you can see the azaleas over there. Can you see the let me see. Can you see a little pink azaleas? Next time I'll give you more of a tour. All right, guys. Yasher koach. Very good discussion today. So we'll pick up on Thursday, right? Excellent. All right. Yasher koach. Yasher koach, everyone. See you later. Enjoy your bonfires.
Wait, Ismar, did you see that?